How are you anyway? Yours?
I'm good. Well, I mean, I suppose to start us off, because we didn't do this last time, who are you?
I'm Dave.
You're Dave.
And who are you? You're Nathan.
I'm Nathan.
Yeah.
You could let me finish. Yeah, I'm Nathan.
I know who you are.
Okay.
Why are you telling me who you are? I know who you are.
I'm telling Patrick.
In
his
email or something. You're telling the five people who listen. Yeah. Two of whom are us.
Yeah, I listened to the first one today actually.
Yeah,
yeah, it's quite interesting listening to the sound of your own voice.
It is, yeah, it is.
I think it's one of those weird things actually, because I've been doing podcasting for other stuff for a little while. And the first thing that I do with that is edit myself out as much as possible so I don't have to listen to my own voice.
Yeah, well, you're also actually interviewing people though, aren't you? So it's sort of like a slightly different kettle of fish.
Yeah. But this is, I mean, it was okay actually. So that's kind of like this podcast.
Yeah, I think
at least the first one.
We sound like total professionals at it. We sound like we've been doing it for years.
Yeah, but we've been just, you know, talking about rubbish.
Yeah, I've been talking about rubbish for, I've been alive for 32 years, but obviously I wasn't talking about rubbish for the first couple of years because I couldn't talk. I've been talking rubbish for about 29 years, probably 30 years. I've got a good practice.
Between the two of us, it's been nearly 20 years. So
yes, yeah, it's true.
We have experience of talking.
Vast experience. Yeah. So what do you want to talk about first?
Well, I thought it might be interesting to start off because we actually got a chance to game this week, increasingly rare. And we played
Fiasco. Maybe we should tell the listener that we live in different
cities. The listener.
The gentle listener. We live far away from each other. Yeah. But it's about 4 hours. We don't often. Well, about 3 times a year, would you say? Something like that, 4 times a year.
Yeah.
Although we do play like on G+ and like play by post and stuff like that. But if it's actual face to face, it's maybe just a couple of times a year, isn't it? A handful.
Yeah.
We played Fiasco. We were in Antarctica. Not playing Fiasco in Antarctica. We were playing it in a pub, in a bar, but the setting was Antarctica. And there were loads of penguins involved.
Yeah.
Various stages. pecking people's bodies and the scene for the violent showdown, really, wasn't it? The penguin colony. The penguins sort of took centre stage, really, in the big final sort of climax.
It felt very appropriate because the way I've had Fiasco sold to me in the past is that it's kind of a... It's for telling sort of Coen brother-esque stories of people.
I suppose it depends how you define Coen brothers, though, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I think when people say that, but they mean it's like Fargo, I think. Because,
well, exactly. That's what was in my mind just now with the ice.
Because it's like, you know, they do, you know, it's not like, have you seen Inside Llewellyn Davis or Llewyn Davis or whatever it's called?
No.
Llewyn? That's not like Fiasco. it panned out quite well, didn't it, really? It did sort of rise to a crescendo. Yeah. Like it was sort of like a mix between like a sort of like a caper, wasn't it? Crossed with a bad romance novel.
Well, the romance was there in one scene, basically.
Yeah, well, wasn't even that, was
where
it?
My character admitted, yeah, a flashback.
Yes.
My character, I suppose, in explaining away another character's death, or at least setting up who that other character was who had died, had a flashback to talking to that character when they were still alive. And for some reason, it turned out that my character had arranged for them to come and work on this Antarctic survey base
on Ross Island.
Ross Island,
and it wasn't even romance, was it? It was like totally unrequited romance.
Oh yeah,
because she was completely horrified.
It was like when you go up to somebody in school with a Valentine's card, and they don't even know who you are. You know, you're that person.
Yeah, yeah. But, she I mean, died, and that so was, she got...
yeah. You know. And that was awkward at a boys' school when that happened. So.
I wouldn't go off on too many tangents. Try and keep the tangents down this time. I was just going to go launch on a tangent, but I won't. What else happened?
I enjoyed it as because I'd seen the tabletop episodes of Fiasco and I'd heard little bits and pieces, but I really enjoyed the setup for it.
Yeah, it was fun.
Actually, the way that things get set up. It was really interesting and quite freeing to just have these very small constraints put on what the potential could be. You know, just roll some dice and then you just pick a result.
Yeah. It reminded me a bit of, some various things, but it reminded me a bit of, do you remember Diaspora? We played that. Unsuccessfully, because I hated it, but... we did that. The setup was fun, though. It was sort of a bit like that, and it was a bit like Microscope as well.
Yes, I thought it was very, very similar to Microscope, yeah.
Yeah, and in the same way, I don't really think it's... I'm sort of going to open a bit of a Pandora's box, but I don't think it's really a role-playing game, is it? It was the first time I sort of genuinely thought, yeah, there is sort of a difference between a story game and a role-playing game. Because at no point did I really think, like, okay, this character, Rigobert Kung, my character's name, Dr. Rigobert Kung. I didn't feel like he... I don't feel like he and I ever were as one. I think he was just like a chess piece that I was sort of moving around. You know, I never felt any sort of connection with that character. It was just like, he was just a device to sort of, see what happened next in the story.
Okay.
Do you get what I mean by that?
I think I do. So when you play, I'm trying to think of a game where you've played a character because you've DM'd a fair few times when we've played.
I'm always like a special guest character, aren't I? Because I'm always like visiting.
Yeah.
I played a pickup artist in that game. Do you remember that guy? That guy with the pet raccoon. I can't remember his name now.
Yes, I can't remember his name either. And that's it.
I played that transsexual cleric as well. With the man catcher. Do you remember her or him?
Yeah. That just sounds so dodgy. It's like I played a transsexual cleric with a man catcher.
Yeah.
that's a really odd sentence.
It is. It is very odd. There's loads of like layers of sort of pretense in that, isn't there? It's like, or not pretense, or kind of like, it's a man who dresses up as a woman who is a character in a role playing game. Do you know what I mean? It's like layer after layer of kind of sort of costume and stuff in that, isn't there?
Can I ask a question then, Dave? Because you've got me thinking here. And so where do you think the distinction comes from then? So you said like you felt like Rigobert Kung was a chess piece.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to disagree with that, obviously, because that's what you think.
but you don't think that, Dave. That's wrong.
Don't think that, don't you? But I get the sense when I sort of, I try not to dip into any forum too much, but I get the sense for a lot of people when they play story games, they connect with the character more, and they feel like characters in, for example, and obviously this is not limited to D&D, that they are more like a chess piece because they are. It's very gamey.
Yeah, and if they die, it doesn't matter because you just roll up as a character or whatever. Yeah. I can kind of see that. Yeah. I think it's more just you're kind of more immersed in, if you're playing like say D&D, like a traditional game, I think you're just more immersed in what's happening. So you kind of, because your goal really is to keep your character alive, isn't it? You know, even though I've just said like you don't care too much if they die, it's sort of like you build up the experience and the equipment and all that kind of thing, and after a long period of time, like this PC has got connections with other PCs and with NPCs and stuff. So if the character dies, it's like a big, you've invested a lot of time, haven't you?
Yeah.
And sort of effort in that character, so you kind of identify them with them on a more sort of sort of identify with them on a personal level, I think, don't you? And it's also just the way you're playing the game. It's not, when you're playing a story game, you're very abstracted from what's happening because you're kind of behind the fourth wall, aren't you? You know, mm-hmm. when you play Fiasco, you're setting up all of the events that are happening. You're choosing the order in which the events occur, and you're choosing what events happen. So you're very abstracted from the character.
Because you set specific scenes rather than, say we go there and then somebody...
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And then
a third party
yeah.
mix.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's no random encounters in Fiasco.
No. It's all sort of... the game is about the story. It's not about the characters. Whereas I think in D&D, the game is more about what the characters are doing and what you're discovering in the role of the character. But I suppose it's more about the role of the DM as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because there's no DM in Fiasco, obviously. Mm. Whereas in D&D, you know, the DM is creating the world, isn't he? And so if you're in some sense exploring his mind, I suppose that's a different sort of thought entirely, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's opening a discussion for another day, maybe. we've delved into the mind. In our group, we've delved into the minds of you, me, and Patrick.
Yeah, we have. Well, I don't know what we've discovered, though. We've discovered that you like killing things. And we've discovered...
Not as a DM.
No, killing people. Yeah. It's weird, that, isn't it? As a DM, yeah. I think I probably like killing people the most. Don't I?
I remember that game of Cyberpunk.
Yeah, where you all got the shot through the door, didn't you? That was good, that bit. And your character got killed at the end of the whole campaign, didn't he?
Yeah.
Shot by those blokes. Those Cameroonian witch doctor guys.
Yeah, but that was really fitting as well. When you mentioned before, like the Fiasco the other day, sort of built to a crescendo.
Mm.
That game of Cyberpunk really built to something. And it built in a strange way because it
seemed like it was going one way, didn't it? And then it just didn't work out. Like, you had this big plan and it didn't come off. And so something else happened entirely, didn't it?
Yeah. But it built to a natural sort of pause for the whole thing. I mean, we may go back to it, we may not.
It felt almost satisfying. Yeah, it was satisfying, yeah. But it felt almost like there was an unfinished business, didn't it? Something else happened after that. Whoever's listening to this is probably just like, what are they talking about? You know, it's like somebody describing their dream. It's like, you just go, yeah, it's interesting, yeah.
Did I tell you that I had a dream the other night that I was invited on stage at some kind of film event by Jeff Goldblum and Will Smith at a 20-year an Independence Day retrospective. And because I'd met them earlier at some kind of pre-cocktail party and they thought I was really funny.
Yeah.
And so they invited me on stage to chat with them for a little bit. And I kind of was talking about how... It's amazing the sort of things that you talk about in dreams and in games, and on podcasts. Mm. I really remember distinctly saying, I really liked both of your work in Jurassic Park. And Will Smith said, I wasn't in Jurassic Park. And I went, exactly, yeah. And I said, yeah, that really worked for me that you weren't in Jurassic Park. And then he sort of like did a like he mocked like, you know, who's going to take a swing at me, and then we all had a big laugh, and then hey, what?
It's a really good job that Will Smith wasn't in Jurassic Park. he would have ruined it. Oh, that's funny. See, I'm glad you told me about that dream. That worked. That's the first time I've ever heard
actually
about that dream.
But actually, do you know who he would have played in Jurassic Park as well? He would have played
Sam Neill's character.
No. Dennis Nedry.
Oh. And he gets those spitting dinosaurs. What are they called? What are they called? We're gonna have to look it up on Wikipedia. Yeah. Hold on.
Spitting dinosaur.
Just look at Jurassic Park, innit? Or just look up Dennis Nedry. Nedry. There'll be a page devoted to him. Here we go. Appears in Jurassic Park, novel and film.
Dilophosaurus.
Yeah, Dilophosaurus, that's it, yeah. that's thinking about it, that's Newman, isn't it? The guy who plays Dennis Nedry, yeah. whatever that actor's name is.
Wade Knight.
That's my idea for a role playing game. It's like you all play actors who have like reversed their position with another actor. It's like, okay, Will Smith has taken on. He's kind of like, I'm not making any sense here.
Will Smith is playing Jeff Goldblum's character, for example, in Independence Day.
Yeah.
And Jeff Goldblum is playing a fighter pilot.
Yeah. But it sort of transcends films that you can work, from film to film. So, in this game, Will Smith is Newman. Jeff Goldblum is Jerry Seinfeld. You can think of the possibilities.
Who would play Kramer?
Who else is in the dream? You?
I think we've gone as far as we dare on this tangent.
Cut that bit out.
No, it's too good to keep to cut. Sorry, rather.
We're not allowed. No matter how much rubbish we talk, it's got to stay in.
Yeah,
it's our unique.
Another resolution. Let's resolve never to talk about our dreams ever again.
Yeah. Well, unless it's funny.
Unless it's funny.
Mm. Unless Will Smith appears again.
One thing I wanted to, when we were sort of chatting before talking this time, you mentioned that it might be interesting to talk about games that you want to run.
Yes.
So what do you want to run, Dave? What is it that you've not had a chance to?
I bought graph paper today. That's how serious I am about running a game. I'm going to make a dungeon, make a mega dungeon. My idea was, imagine if there was a glacier that had been, created, it had been made into a dungeon. So, the green, in Greenland, there's a big ice sheet that's literally kilometers thick. So I was thinking, imagine if some sort of ancient beings had created a cave system within that ice sheet.
Okay.
And that's the dungeon. That's what I thought. So I thought and then I started thinking okay, I've got to have some sort of mechanism whereby when you're in the dungeon, when you're in the ice sheet, you gradually, you freeze to death. So you can only stay in there for a certain short period of time before you die, unless you've got some kind of device to protect you or some kind of magic item or something. Mm-hmm. That's literally all the idea is at the moment. But I thought that would be
okay.
That'd be fun.
That's kind of a stark contrast, or at least from what I know of it, to you and Suin.
Yes.
They seem almost they couldn't be further apart from each other. So is that where that's come from? Maybe you just want to get as far away from this other project as possible.
Could be that, or it could be the fact that on Netflix, I was watching Frozen Planet the other day.
That might have something to do.
I love the idea in my mind. It could be. It's like a little bit of a palate cleanser. The thing is, I'm going to have a lot more time now because Yunsuin will be finished fairly soon. In a week or two, I think, and then it's just a matter of getting the art together, and then, and also because for the listener who doesn't know, excuse me, I've just belched. You can cut out of the podcast.
Yeah, everything stays in.
I am a university lecturer, so we've just finished teaching a couple of weeks ago, and I've got a bit of marking to do, there's exams, but I've also got quite a lot of spare time now, or at least not spare time, but my schedule is more flexible. So I should have more time to actually sort of draw up the stuff that you need for D&D. Because, I think D&D is quite sort of time intensive on the DM, no matter sort of what edition you're using. Because you've got to create hex maps, you've got to, draw up random encounter tables, you've got to map dungeons and stuff like that. It's not like that cyberpunk game we were talking about, that was set in Liverpool. So, we all know Liverpool and we know the geography of it. So there's no need at all for me as the GM to make maps because it's all, we know. But obviously, you're playing D&D, it's a pretty mythical world. So you have to do all that yourself. So it's quite a lot more legwork, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a burden on your shoulders. It's fun, obviously, as well as being a burden. It's also fun, but it does take time. But I've got time now. I should have more time. So, That's Double cool. C. And what about you? Tell us about the game you want to run, if any.
I'd like to get back to, well, there's two things. Well, I think more simply, I'd like to run more sessions in the campaign world that you dipped in and out of, but that I was playing with Patrick and David.
Mm, yeah, Wetham.
Around the city of Wetham. Mm. And that was mostly, that whole campaign basically grew from a couple of Lamentations of the Flame Princess, little adventures, so things like Tales of the Scarecrow, and developing a seclusium.
Yeah, I was there for that session. That was good.
That was good. I really enjoyed that actually. And, yeah,
it was the kind of thing, like, I think when you have like the seclusium of, is it pronounced Orphone or Orphony? I don't know. The seclusium of Orphone, let's call it.
Yeah.
When you have that book, it's quite interesting when you flick through, and it's sort of like, you know, you can kind of, it's quite, I like the atmosphere of it, and I think it's quite inspiring in that way. But I started creating a seclusium, and I was just like, yeah, okay, this is like, you know, interesting enough, but it didn't really go anywhere. But in play, mm-hmm. it really worked, didn't it? As it was like an adventure location, it was really good.
Yeah, I thought it worked, and I think it's definitely a book for, I wouldn't think, again, I've only used it sort of the once, and actually I think things really improved when I got the actual hardback for Christmas.
Yeah.
And because previously I'd just been running from the PDF.
The PDF, yeah.
It really works better in sort of paper rather than digital. Mm-hmm. It's great for as a process, as a tool for helping you create something mm-hmm. In advance. It can go really deep. You can spend a lot of time with it. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember reading a couple of reviews of people like, well, you know, there's one part where there's 20 different descriptions, for example, of what somebody's eyes look like.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you could just as easily make something up. And, you know, you could do that.
Yeah.
But there's something quite fun, I think, about when you've got those kind of tables of like random descriptors for, say, like, what does this servant look like? And you roll a couple of dice.
Yeah.
And then you kind of, when you get those together, it's, you've mentioned it before on your blog, but this idea of like creativity by constraint. So you think like, well, why do they have an eye patch?
Yeah.
You
know,
they seem otherwise healthy. So why have they got the eye patch? How come they've done this or that?
Yeah.
And that really sort of gets your mind going. And for that particular one, what would it have been called? The Seclusium of Hergen.
Yeah.
Yeah. in the game.
Yeah. But
this little web of people who were at that place. I mean, it really grew just because as I was creating it, you know, just all these little things just get suggested to you.
Yeah.
It's a very nice tool for doing that.
It was, yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to do more.
Destroyed it, didn't we? We destroyed that web, like all these intricate relationships.
I think everybody who was there
ended up dead. Everybody was killed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
For one reason or another. Yeah. Yeah. What were you going to say? I interrupted.
No, it's okay. The other thing that I'd like to do, I really, the first campaign that I actually ran was a game of Dogs in the Vineyard.
Yes. I never played in that campaign.
You never played in that, but I ran that for Patrick and David and somebody else who joined us, and I really enjoyed that game. The setting of like this kind of like an almost West. I know it's not the old West, but this kind of like it's a similar sort of era.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of worked for me. Again, as someone who was running it, and I think we played five sessions, and the first session was quite rocky because even though I'd read it a couple of times, I'd thought I understood the way like conflicts were resolved. It would have been really great if I'd taken the time beforehand to kind of do some dummy hands, as it were, you know, just like roll a couple of things, but because in play it wasn't intuitive at all first. For people who hadn't played it. I'm sure if you know what you're doing, then it's fine.
Yeah.
And it did get to be much easier.
Mm-hmm.
But my idea actually would be to take the basic dogs stuff I've had this kind of on my to-do list for ages, but set it in the Oort cloud, like right at the edge of the solar system.
I wasn't expecting you to say that.
No, exactly. Yeah. And you have like all these little like asteroids and colonies out there. But the idea would be that the dogs are, I suppose, warrior monks or something like that, because at the edge of space, or like the edge of like absolutely nothing, the edge of the solar system, you would probably, or my thinking behind it is, you would need people who were absolutely convinced of the divine in order to be kind of proper administrators of justice. Do you know what I mean?
And also mental enough to want to do it as well. Like, why would you want... Yeah. Why would you want to go like to the Oort cloud to sort of try and enforce order and stuff unless you were like, you know, madly convinced of your sort of divine calling? It's like missionaries, isn't it? Or sort of, well, all the characters and Dogs in the Vineyard for that matter. You would have to be sort of like, just like insanely devoted to the cause, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really good, actually. I quite like the sound of that. It's sort of... reminds me a bit, you don't know much about 40K, do you? You don't play much War.
No, I don't at all.
It reminds me of like the librarians in 40K. Do you know about the librarians? They're sort of like...
again, unexpected character classes.
Yeah, they're not the librarians you think of. Or the Inquisitors. Inquisitors sort of go around, making sure chaos doesn't insinuate itself into humanity, you know, so they sort of go from planet to planet, and if they discover a heresy or something, you know, they just kind of like, well, it usually ends up in, you know, all out sort of war and genocide or whatever, it being 40K. But yeah, the idea is they kind of root out heretics all across the universe, all across the galaxy.
Yeah.
It just sort of, makes me think of that. That'd be cool, though. Okay. I like that. I quite like that, that kind of setup of certain people having the job of, you know, maintaining order in like a very chaotic environment is intrinsically interesting, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I'm paraphrasing badly. there's something from Dogs in the Vineyard, like the intention or the idea of the dogs is as the, you know, the players, whatever you do, is the correct thing to do. Because the person who's administering this is a watchdog of the faith. Whatever they do is right. And other people can call you on it, but you kind of have to sort of take ownership of that. And I think that's in a kind of a, for this kind of like space setting that I've had in mind for a while, that would also seem to really work. It would have to be some kind of decentralized thing. There's no sort of, I don't want it to be like Judge Dredd, where it's just like, death.
But what's the character? It's not Judge Dredd, is it? But you know, like the crime is life, the punishment is death.
That's Judge Death. There's not going to be, you can't call Earth, you know what I mean? You can't call some kind of higher cause to adjudicate it when the dogs roll up at your asteroid or your little comet factory or whatever. If there is a problem, they resolve it and then they go on their way. And I kind of like that. And the setup stuff for dogs is really neat. I don't know whether have you read Dogs in the Vineyard?
I have, yeah. I've never really been involved. I've got it. Yeah, I've bought it, and I've read through it, and always sort of thought about playing it, but never quite got around to it.
The stuff in there, I think it's a different way of effect. In some ways, generating a hex map. You know, my impression of, because I've not run with a hex map before. Obviously, I've seen like Isle of the Unknown. I've seen one that's been produced by somebody else, but I've never created one. But my impression from different things that I've read is that you kind of like start off with the grid and then roll some dice potentially to tell you what the scenery is like, and then roll some dice to see where, where, for example, an abandoned temple is or where a town is. But like in Dogs, you start off with kind of like a handful of towns. and you're encouraged to basically start really small in each town. Mm. Like, what is somebody's sin in this town? Mm. You know, what is somebody's like little fault or the, and then just build from that. Like, you know, what would that cause someone to do? And how might that impact other people? And how might that impact the whole town? Mm. And how might that attract the attention of, you know, demons?
Yeah.
And that, it's really cool.
Mm.
Again, as like this guided process for building a little corner of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can do it. You can do it with. It's not even a corner of the world. It's an asteroid.
Yeah.
A corner of the Oort cloud.
Yeah.
So it could be.
Potentially, that's my thought.
So I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent, but not all that much. Do you know how far away? Do you know how far away the Oort cloud is? Because I it's in that Bill Bryson book where he talks about what's it called? A Short History of Nearly Everything, I think. He basically just talks about how big the solar system is, and how long it would take to you know, sort of travel between planets and that sort of thing. I'm just looking at it. It's on my blog. I won't read the whole quote, but it says, if you reduced the Earth to the size of a pea, right? So if you were working on that sort of scale, so the Earth is the size of a pea, Jupiter would be 300 meters away, and Pluto would be 2.5 kilometers away. And Pluto is not even halfway to the Oort cloud. That's how far away the Oort cloud is. So the Oort cloud is like, if the Earth was the size of a pea, the Oort cloud would be 5 kilometers away or more.
Yeah. I quickly, while you were talking that, I just skipped to the Wikipedia page for that, and it says here that it's the approximate distance is 50,000 astronomical units.
Yeah. And that's a unit of distance from the Earth to the Sun, isn't it, I think, yeah.
Yeah. So that actually stacks up to be nearly a light year.
Yeah. So it's like, it's like impossibly far, isn't it? And that's just our solar system. It's sort of...
I think if you were...
Solar has some planets around it, and it's like the next star just over there.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to use the word astronomical, but it is, isn't it? In the sense of the word, it's astronomical distances.
This is why I have this feeling that there would be deep pockets of religion, of communities living out at that distance, because you would have to have something to hang on to.
Yeah, and there'd be all those of, like, inbred weirdos, wouldn't they, as well?
Yeah, some of them would be.
Yeah. Inbred weirdos. There'd be like transhumanists as well, wouldn't there?
Transhumanist inbred weirdos.
Just
keep stacking up the adjectives.
Yeah. Transhumanist inbred Mormons living in the Oort cloud. That's what you should call it. That's the name of the campaign.
I'll call Vincent Baker and say, Dear Mr. Baker, my colleague's suggestion, this was his title, by the way. I don't want to say stress that this was mine. I had this idea, but he came up with transhumanist weirdo Mormons in the Oort cloud. I think there might be a snappier title, but what do you think?
I think that works really well. It's really catchy.
Is it really? I'm gonna take it under advisement.
Yeah, it does sound good though. It sounds fun. I think that would be cool.
Well, we'll see what happens with that then.
It's almost like that's the kind of thing as well. You could almost imagine that being like a TV series. You know, sort of like every week. Because it's really episodic, isn't it? Not transhuman weirdo Mormons, but dogs in the Oort cloud.
We're gonna get in such trouble. You keep saying transhuman weirdo Mormons.
I'm not talking about real Mormons. Yeah, if you're a Mormon, please don't be offended. I'm not talking about real Mormons. I'm talking about like imaginary ones in the Oort cloud. I'm not talking about that now. I'm just talking about your idea of like the Oort cloud and guys going around sort of solving problems. It sounds like a TV show, doesn't it? Because it's very episodic. Yeah. You know, every week they rock up on some planet. I mean, that's basically what Next Gen is.
Yeah.
you know, every week they arrive at a different planet. There's some issue that they have to solve, and they solve it. It's like the original series of Star Trek as well, in a sense, isn't it? Although obviously it's more, that's more about exploration, but it's a very similar sort of similar concept. Just rock up at a planet.
Most of the time in Next Gen, and I don't want to, this isn't a criticism of Next Gen, it's not intended that way, cause, but a lot of the time they solve that by being, they solve a problem by being morally superior, don't they?
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, well, we, you know, in the Federation, we do it this way.
Yeah, yeah, so we don't have money or any of that nonsense. And being, well, obviously, and having much better technology as well, usually. That helps, doesn't it?
Unless it's a Riker episode, and then it's,
yeah, it's
in
like
the Federation.
All these alien
in the Federation, we, for some reason, don't respect that some people are gender neutral.
And we don't care whether they live or die. Effectively, we don't care about the fact that you're going to get executed. If you, yeah, it's like, come on, babe. You know, okay, you may be executed if you and I have sex, but you know, it'll be that good. It'll be worth it.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much how he, in the episode, and that's exactly how he pitched it to her.
I don't think it was quite like that, but...
I can't really remember it all that well now, but she was going to be executed, wasn't she, in the...
They did some kind of... I think the implication was they did some kind of, brain surgery, I guess.
Yeah.
To make her realise the error of her ways.
Yeah, they did,
And that's, I mean, that's
like a lot of things. Go on.
I was going to say, I mean, that's a kind of, I'm not sure that it's really played out this way in the episode, and I apologise for people who have a much better knowledge of Next Gen, because it's a while since I've seen it, but they juggle with those moral quandaries of like, well, you know, their society is set up like this, but there are a minority of people who don't want to live that way, but their society says that they absolutely have to. And there are parallels between that and obviously issues that have been, well, still are prevalent.
It's very clever when you, well, it's a very clever sort of analogue, isn't it? Analogy.
But then at the end of the episode, it's just like, well actually it happened, and you know, and
but
the
she
end
gets
point
back, she gets brainwashed, doesn't she, back into being
Or surgeried, or
I can't remember now, but yeah,
and then it's like Riker's a bit like, oh well, she'll leave and Riker in 2 weeks.
Exactly. And never think about it ever again.
Well, I mean, and that's the nature of that.
There it is. But it is funny how that happens in Star Trek. There's that other episode where Riker again rescues that little boy, alien thing. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where there's this little alien who is left on this, he's like living in some cave or some like desert planet or something, because his parents have left him there. And Riker's like, it's okay, you can come and live with us on the Enterprise. And the alien does. It does that, but you never see it again. You know, so it's like living with Riker, but you never see it in another episode.
Is that the one where at first Riker believes that...
The alien's like...
He's got some kind of amnesia, because the alien basically has some kind of really amazing holodeck.
Yes, that's right,
We've really gone off on a tangent away from game.
We have. That's good. That's going to annoy me, the name of that episode. I think it's in the third season or the fourth season. I can't remember now. But that, having said that, sort of Dogs in the Oort Cloud would make a good TV series. It's funny how that kind of episodic style of TV show has gone just completely out of fashion, hasn't it?
Oh, totally, yeah.
Like, you know, if you think about the 80s and 90s, at least on British TV, you had... You know, Star Trek Next Gen was on a lot, and that was completely episodic, or almost totally episodic. And then you had things like Poirot and...
even X-Files,
the X-Files, exactly. Where, like, everything was a discrete story, wasn't it? Every single week was a discrete story. Now, you've got to have the whole box set. You've got to watch each episode to know what's going on.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
You know, there's more audience buy-in. You know, the audiences might not be as large, say, as something which was, you know, just discrete chunks of these characters each week. But you know, you can sort of guarantee that, you know, X million people will tune in each week to find out what is going on in Lost, for example. As an example, I don't want to get into Lost or any particular series, but I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe long form stories told in discrete installment sells.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of advertising. And,
maybe you're right. Lost. It was 24, wasn't it? It seemed to be sort of the start of that, I think, that trend. You'd had stuff before, maybe Babylon 5, but Babylon 5 wasn't, it didn't have like mainstream success, did it, in the way that 24 did?
No.
And I never watched it, really, so I'm speaking completely extemporaneously.
That's a big word for a Friday night.
Yeah, I like extemporaneously. It's a good word. It should be used more often. Yes. We still come to a natural halt in the conversation.
No. We have. Let's look at our list of topics.
We've insulted Mormons. We've talked about Star Trek.
don't draw me into it.
We've talked a little bit about games. A little bit about games. Yeah, okay, I've insulted Mormons. And we've talked about glaciers and other. I think that's like, you know, it's like, okay, insult Mormons, tick. Next Generation, tick. This is our list of topics.
Okay, my list of topics. Here's a question, Dave. What was the first time that you DM'd something? What was that game like?
Oh, God. You know, you're asking me a question.
I am. Yes, I am asking you a question.
You're literally asking me a question.
Yes.
God, would have been. It would have been. No, do you know what it was? Do you remember the Fighting Fantasy role-playing game? Advanced Fighting Fantasy? It was a game of that. And I think it may just have been me and one friend, I think. And I don't remember much about what happened. I remember there was a dungeon, because we were playing with them. Whatever the first book was called.
Dungeoneer.
Dungeoneer, that's it. We were playing with that. And I think I was sort of running it more like a fighting fantasy game. Like, you know, like the book. Because I was sort of like, I don't think I'd grasped the concept that, like, you could do anything, you know, within reason. I think we'd done, like, hitherto had just been, like, playing fighting fantasy or reading fighting fantasy books. So I think that I was like DMing it, like, okay, you're in a room, you can go left or right. And my friend would be like, okay, left. And I'd be like, okay, you know, roll your luck score or something. You know, it was just kind of like, it was panning out like a fighting fantasy book did. But it's so hard for me to remember anything that happened. I think.
Well,
no, I really can't remember.
Okay, well, I mean, I've just this made me remember because I had all those books as well, the Advanced Fighting Fantasy. They were very scripted. That was kind of like the advice for the DM for that. Am I right in remembering that? You know, you had like a
I think it was even described as being sort of like a film, wasn't it? You know, so I think they used a lot of metaphor. Like it was sort of you're like the director, and you know the players are like actors. And you've got to sort of like, you know, set up the scenery and all this kind of thing. I think in my memory, that's at least that's how it was described. It was a railroad. You know, it was. But it was like it was a good introduction as well, because I remember it was sort of like I don't know how popular it was in America at all, because I don't know if Fighting Fantasy was big there.
Maybe somebody can comment a gaming podcast about nothing.blogspot.com and tell us
if the listener is American, maybe he he or she could confirm or deny. I hope the listener's
Yeah, I was going to say that they tuned out by this point, and we will never know whether Advanced Fighting Fantasy is popular or any other country.
Yeah,
any other country.
Yeah,
or if you're in Germany and listening to this,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. But that, I think Fighting Fantasy was sort of like the gateway, wasn't it, for a lot of people
in the UK? Yeah,
I think more so than like basic D&D. Yeah, like. Basic D&D existed, and obviously people played it, but because I played it, but I felt like Advanced Fighting Fantasy was the thing that got me interested in RPGs. Because I remember like reading Titan as well. Do you remember Titan, which is like
I remember Titan.
It's sort of like the gazetteer, isn't it, of the fighting fantasy sort of world or universe. And I remember reading that like cover to cover and thinking like, wow, this is so cool. You know, someone's like created this world. even though they're looking back, it's just, go on.
I think when you have no friends at all.
Mm. Reading, what are you trying to say, Nathan?
reading, what were the books called? There's Titan, there's Dungeoneer, Black Sand.
Yeah, Black Sand. Alliance, yeah. Black Sand, Alancia was the one with the battle rules, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think you and I played that once. Or at least
I think you tried
to.
Yeah. We didn't have any minis. I do remember this. We had like scraps of squared paper. I was like, this big square piece.
Yeah.
This is.
And we
a dragon.
Wrote on like, okay, you know, this is like 50 orcs or whatever.
Yeah. And then by the time we'd done all that, it was like 3 hours.
Yeah, it's like time to go now.
Yeah. So well, you know. Shelly just set up on the bedroom floor, you know, gust of wind. Yeah. Oh, well.
We never played it again. That Alancia. There was Out of the Pit as well. Do you remember Out of the Pit, which was the monsters?
I was trying to think, what was that called?
That was like the bestiary. There was also, before Advanced Fighting Fantasy, there was a Fighting Fantasy role-playing game as well. Do you know what that is?
Really?
Yeah, I've got it somewhere, or like it's in like the loft at my parents' house or something, but it was like an even simpler version of Advanced Fighting Fantasy, but that's the most I can remember about it. But you know, that does exist. If you Google it, you know, Google like Fighting Fantasy, the introductory role playing game or something like that, or the first ever role playing game or something. Hang on, Fighting Fantasy, the introductory. I think it was called the introductory role playing game. Yeah, here we go. Fighting Fantasy, the introductory role-playing game. Oh, I'm just looking at it now, the cover. There's like a tiger man bursting out of a dice on the cover. Have you Googled it? Are you looking at what?
When you mentioned Out of the Pit, I went to look at Amazon, and there was like, there's reprints from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Of Out of the Pit and other things, but they're very expensive.
Really?
Comparatively, yeah.
Hmm.
Like £15 for Out of the Pit.
Jesus.
And
this is like coming full circle. Let's talk about the library again, because
everyone liked that.
Because I used to get that book out of the library. this should be like, you know, every week, like we can just like end up talking about Elston Road Library again. So you know, like this is the library bit of the episode.
I did get
that book out of the library a lot. No, we won't do that. I promise. I'm just looking at these are the names. There's two introductory adventures that you could play in this book. The first one's called The Wishing Well, and the second one's called Shagrad's Hive of Peril.
Shagrad.
It's set beneath a large oak tree in a dungeon owned by the black elf Shagrad. So there you go. That's interesting, isn't it? A dungeon under a tree. It's not something you see very often in D&D, is it? It's kind of like a Narnia sort of type thing, isn't it? You know, like a little burrow that leads to a dungeon. It's interesting. Do you remember any of the other Fighting Fantasy books? Can you remember anything else that stuck out in your mind?
One thing that I thought was quite cool about those three main Advanced Fighting Fantasy books was that the stories the adventures that were presented in them alongside all the other different spell lists and all that, they were all connected. So the idea was in the first one, you go off to kill the wizard. Unfortunately, I really don't remember this. You can sing a little song if you like. But you go off to do that. But in order to do that, you actually set somebody who's even worse free.
Yes.
And then that has repercussions. So for the second story in Black Sand, you are sort of on the trail of this person. I think it's almost like you realise somewhere on the way into it that actually you've caused something bad to happen.
Yeah.
And then in the third book, you're basically trying to sort that problem out. But the third book, if I remember rightly, introduced player characters who would think, like a goblin, for example. Yeah. It seemed like when I was young, that was like, oh my gosh, you could play as a goblin.
Yeah.
And then I realised I don't have any friends to run this game for.
We don't want to create the impression that neither of us had any friends.
I
think it was more just we didn't know people. I think when I was a young teenager anyway, I don't think I knew many people who were interested in playing D&D or whatever. When I was sort of 15, 16, that sort of age, played a lot. Yep. But in like my early teens, it was more. I played a lot of Warhammer though. So, you know, me and my friends used to play Warhammer like every day. When I was sort of, 12 or 13. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had a house. He had this like big, a pool table, but it was just covered in this big massive wooden board that we use as like a battlefield. And honestly, we were playing Warhammer or Warhammer 40K or there's a game called Necromunda, which was, that was really good actually. That was like a gang war sort of game. Honestly, we just we played it constantly. Blood Bowl. But for some reason, we never really played RPGs all that often. We did, but just not very often. It may have been just because we enjoyed sort of playing with models and stuff more. We enjoyed sort of the tactics of a war game more than we enjoyed the immersion story of an RPG. But that was just for a couple of years, though.
Okay.
What were we talking about? We've gone off on the road.
We were talking about nothing. We're talking about Advanced Fighting Fantasy, I think.
That's right. But, it may as well be nothing.
May as well.
Maybe that could be the next one we to end it.
I think that's probably is a good point to end it. Because that one Mormon listener that we had
Has gone.
Is now just kind of like, writing a letter to the editor.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like it'll be, angry in Utah. I don't mean to be offensive. I could have used any other religion, but I won't. I'll stop there.
No, because, why? Yeah. Oh, well done.
Not going to insult any more religious people.
And if anyone... And if anyone would like to complain about this or any other episode, you can do so at agamingpodcastaboutnothing.blogspot.com.
Yeah. It's like that's so desperate we are for comments. It's just like, if you want to complain about something.
Yeah. Should we just be invoking trolls?
Yeah.
We're so desperate for comments that we'd even comments. Or boop. Or anybody from boop.com.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Anything abuse, it's fine. we welcome it. We welcome banter. Welcome.
Banter is good.
Epic banter. Or just observations. Discussion.
I mean, that's all this is really.
A load of observations, a load of ill-formed and uninformed observations.
And the great thing about the internet is that while you're talking about stuff, you can look up how far away the Oort cloud is.
And You can. We learned something, didn't we? We learned something.
We did. Say it along with me at home, boys and girls. The Oort cloud is 50,000 astronomical units away.
Astronomical units away.
Which is about a light year.
Yeah. Okay. And there we go.
But maybe next time, because that was technically now episode one. But maybe in episode two, Dave, should we set this up then? Okay, in the next episode, can I spend a little bit of the time, because I'd like to know a little bit about you and Suen. So could you tell us about that in the next episode?
Let's do that. Why don't we actually prepare in advance? Controversially. We spent 5 minutes preparing for this, didn't we? A whole 5 minutes. A few emails. Why don't you prepare questions to ask me? You
can
do that.
I can do that.
Yeah. That's your homework, Nathan.
And I'll talk to you sometime in the next 10 days or so.
Yeah. Cool.
And then hopefully that will, because we've lost one listener. But maybe we'll have another one.
Maybe we can win him back, or win him or her back. Because the next time will be so good.
Yes.
And not offensive to anybody. It'll be perfect.
Great. Okay, so I'll speak to you next time, Dave.
Okay, I'll speak to you next time, Nathan.